This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Another candidate interviewed today. We talked to him a ways back, but back in Douglas County today, a Democratic candidate for Congress, Andrew Kalik, in studio. Thanks for coming in.
Happy to be here.
So, for people who didn't hear the interview the first time around, tell people a little bit about your background, the career, some of the things you've done.
Sure. I'm the son of public school teachers and a former civil rights attorney at the ACLU. I've worked in government and in business, and I'm also a millennial who's faced many of the challenges of my generation, be it student debt, housing affordability, childcare availability, you name it. So I'm trying to bring all those perspectives for a new generation in Congress.
So how did you end up at the ACLU?
It was a dream job for me coming out of law school, an extraordinary place to work, so many challenging problems, complicated cases, and you really learn how to solve problems there. It wasn't always run to the courthouse door. Sometimes it was litigation. Sometimes it was running to the legislature, and sometimes it was going to the streets to create public pressure. It was a fantastic job, and I feel lucky to have been able to serve there.
Now, you said you went there right out of law school, and where was that at?
That was at Harvard.
So talk about going to Harvard. What's that like?
A lot of ambitious people at Harvard, whether they're smart or not, I'll leave to others to judge. But certainly a lot of people interested in serving their community in one way or another. And that's certainly what I took from it. I spent about 25 hours a week there at the Legal Aid Bureau representing people who are facing domestic violence and trying to secure custody of their kids, represented people in Social Security hearings, represented incarcerated folks as they tried to secure justice behind bars. It was an extraordinary place to learn, and I was lucky to be able to attend.
So how long were you at the ACLU?
I was at the ACLU for about 3 years.
And a lot of people, especially legal folks, that seems like a place that a lot of lawyers want to gravitate to. Why move on to other things?
That's right. It was an extraordinary legal job, but I knew that eventually I wanted to serve in a capacity like the one I'm seeking from the voters now in Congress. And in order to do that, I needed to not only work in government, but also work in the private sector. So I understood the perspectives of each of these levers of American power. So I understood how to leverage them for the benefit of working people. And so that I left the ACLU to work in government for about 5 years, worked in the private sector for about 5 years. And here we are. And I'm at the point where I'm ready to serve in Congress for the people of this district and to serve with honor and to serve with integrity.
So when you were in government roles, what were you doing?
I was the chief policy advisor to the New York City Comptroller, which is the chief financial officer of New York City. Obviously, a sprawling jurisdiction, 8.5 million people, a huge budget. We oversaw a pension system that had $200 billion in it. And so my job was to make sure that we not only held corporate America accountable through that pension system to its obligations to pensioners, but also to environmental goals and social goals, but also led on various policy issues of importance to the city and the country, transportation infrastructure, healthcare, education. I was really a jack of all trades there and was able to learn quite a lot.
So when you were with the ACLU, where were you based?
I was based in New York.
So a bunch of time in New York. How do you get from there to the 4th Congressional District?
Well, you meet a daughter of the Willamette Valley in New York City government. That's how it happens. I was very lucky to be placed in the same room as my wife, who was a graduate of Pleasant Hill High. And when we were deciding where we wanted to put down our roots and raise our kids, and we've been blessed with three, it was a short conversation. We were coming right back here to the Southern Willamette Valley, where my kids are now fifth-generation residents. We believe in this place. This is our home, and we are ready to be part of the generation that makes it even greater than it already is.
So as your relationship evolved, how long was it before you were sent out here to look around?
Not long, Kyle. We got married in Oregon in 2016 and moved to Oregon later that year.
So what were your first thoughts coming into Oregon?
Just how gorgeous Oregon is, but also how diverse it is. You don't think about Oregon's diversity because it doesn't hit diversity metrics in certain ways. But in other ways, particularly when it comes to politics, culture, the economy, the 4th District is extraordinarily diverse. Indeed, it's a cross-section of America when you have agriculture and industry, farming and forestry. So I think that's what struck me most. And as I walk around this district, and I am going to every single city, large or small, learning from people, listening to them, showing respect. That's what strikes me the most, is just how diverse this place is and how it really needs somebody who can recognize the diversity that people are bringing to the table and achieve results for everybody.
And you've got a lot of folks with red state ideas, blue state ideas.
Sure.
I mean, while it certainly leans more Democratic in some ways, it's very much a mix.
That's true. And of course, some people ask you, are you a Democrat or a Republican? But more often than not, what they're asking about is, what are you going to do to make healthcare and prescription drugs more affordable? What are you going to do to solve the cost of living crisis when it comes to gas, groceries, housing, or healthcare? There are so many more issues that unite us than divide us. That is clear in every one of the conversations that I have out there. It doesn't mean we don't have huge challenges to solve, to bring people together, to rebuild the fabric of democracy, but there's so much that unites us, and I really do believe that with someone in Congress from a new generation of leadership that has seen polarization not work, we can have a new approach that delivers results right here.
When Congressman DeFazio announced that he was retiring, that rang a lot of bells. That got a lot of people's attention. There had been folks interested in this race whenever it was going to happen. A lot of people were not interested in trying to face up against him from either side. How long was it before you made your decision after he made his announcement?
Wasn't long, Kyle. And you didn't have much time to think about it because this was going to be a 5-month sprint to the primary and then, 6 more months to the general. So I think immediately after Peter announced his retirement, I walked upstairs to talk to my wife about it. We don't make any big decisions without one another on board. And we decided right there, okay, let's see if we can develop the resources to make a real race of this. So I started raising money the following week. And once I realized that I would have that base of support to make this a real race, a real choice for people, it was full steam ahead.
Now, it's a crowded field. A lot of folks interested, a lot of folks running. Some names are more well-known than others. What do you feel like you bring to the table, especially not being as well-known?
Yeah, I've talked about my background at the ACLU in addition to government and the private sector. I think that combination is really powerful. So is the combination of being a millennial, facing those challenges of my generation, and facing the challenges of a parent with 3 kids under 5 in the middle of a pandemic. This has been an extraordinarily difficult time for everybody in America, but maybe no more so than for parents and grandparents. And I think it's important to have that perspective represented in Congress. It's not a common perspective, but it's an important one. And finally, I'm a proud Democrat. My parents were public school teachers. They raised us as labor Democrats. But I am coming from outside the political establishment. I am not the party insider in this race. And I think that the hardest thing to do in politics today is to pop your own political thought bubble and to challenge your own party to be accountable to the people. I've done that in this race, and I'll continue to do it in Congress.
Now, you've lived here for a few years, and you mentioned going around the district. In fact, you're down here today. Where all are you going in this area?
Yeah, so right before talking to you, Kyle, I was up in Drain knocking doors there. After this, I'll be in Sutherland and Oakland. This past weekend, I was down in Curry County talking to folks in those communities. And so I think it's incredibly important that leaders show up everywhere, that they show respect to people, learn from people, and make clear to folks that they want to be a leader for everybody. And I've done that in this race. It's very important to me. I grew up in a small town, and I'll continue to do it.
As you've gone around the district, maybe in places in some cases you haven't been before, what are you hearing from people?
Well, again, I think a lot of the challenges people face are common. They're challenges about the cost of living, housing, healthcare, gas, and groceries. Hear about that all the time. I also hear concerns about climate from everybody, whether they're liberal or conservative. And then last but not least, of course, I hear people concerned about the future for their children. Some of that's climate, but some of that's education. Some of that's access to jobs. Some of that's about being able to come home to Oregon and feel like there's a job waiting for them. So actually, there's a lot of commonalities, and I think that that gives me great hope that we can bring people together here to solve problems.
When you look at Congress, both sides of the aisle, especially some of the folks higher up in leadership, most of them are 60s, 70s, 80s.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, or why do you think it's important to have more millennials in Congress?
You know, I graduated from law school with 6-figure student debt. As a result, I couldn't afford to buy a home until my late 30s, and we get a child care bill for $2,500 a month, every month. And we are among the luckiest millennials you'll find. We can pay those bills, but the vast majority can't. And it's important to have people in Congress that have that lived experience, have that perspective, that can drive solutions to the challenges that my generation and younger people are facing. I also think it's important to have folks of my generation who have grown up in an increasingly polarized and partisan age and who have not seen any benefit from it. We are fed up with it. I talk to college students. They're fed up with it. They want people to put that stuff aside, get to the table together, and tone down the rhetoric and ratchet up the results. And that's what I'm going to do as a member of Congress.
It seems like over the past few years, as I've talked to some folks in various races or just serving or interested in the community, that the millennials really are kind of in their own group, sort of like what you said there, the some of the interests, some of the issues, and whether they're progressive or conservative, there's kind of a, like a millennial way of looking at a lot of things.
Yeah, you know, I think every generation emerges out of its own historical moment. And as a millennial, you know, I graduated right around the time of 9/11 from high school, graduated law school right into the teeth of the financial crisis in the late aughts. Those major events shape our worldview. They shape how we come at issues. They shape our distrust of some institutions and our skepticism about how politics has worked. And so I'm trying to bring a new generation of leadership to D.C., a generation that does things differently. But I'm also trying to make sure that this district has somebody who can rise up in seniority, just like Peter DeFazio did. You know, Peter was 39 when he entered Congress. He dug in, he learned, he built relationships, and he gained seniority. And that made a big difference back home, and I'm trying to do the same thing in D.C.
And so, what age are you right now?
I'll be 38 next month.
All right, back with more in a moment. Andrew Kalik, Democratic candidate for Congress on Inside Douglas County, the interview podcast after 1-541-radio.com. 1247 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1250. Lars Larson coming at 1. KQEN Local Talk at 4. Shannon Sebastian will have your cue this afternoon. Tomorrow, we talk about the work of Habitat for Humanity in the Umpqua Valley, especially with helping folks who were displaced by the Archie Creek wildfire in 2020. Robin Hartman from Habitat will be in on tomorrow's program. Democratic candidate for Congress, Andrew Kalik, in this afternoon. So if you're elected, you mentioned some of them already, but maybe talk more about specific issues you'd really want to focus on.
Yeah, I think climate is right at the top of the agenda there. It's something that affects everybody, farmers, fishermen, foresters, and folks who just love to camp in the woods. And I think we need to take some concrete action to advance the ball. And really, in Congress, every bill should be thought of as a climate bill. There's always opportunities to advance the ball. In addition, the cost of living crisis, from negotiating prescription drug prices for Medicare to making sure that we have a tax code that supports affordable housing, not luxury development, that is got to be priority number 1A for Congress, and I'll work on it from day one.
Have you looked at kind of the committee list? And obviously, as a freshman, you don't get to pick anything. But if you were to be elected and got in, what would you like to be on?
Sure. I'd love to continue Peter's legacy on transportation and infrastructure. It's so critical to this district, from the ports to the roads to the rails. So I'd love to be on that. In addition, having been a civil rights attorney at the ACLU, I think having me on judiciary, thinking about criminal justice reform issues and racial justice issues would be a great spot for me. And then I'm the son of public school teachers, product of public school, somebody who's faced student debt. I'd love to be on the education committee because I think that's super important, not only for our kids, but for our workforce going forward.
Now, it looks like the House will likely be in GOP control after the midterms. As a new member in the minority party in that chamber, how does that impact your effectiveness, though?
Well, you never want to govern in the minority. It's always a little more fun to be able to have a governing majority. But I think there's all sorts of incredible work that you can do as a freshman and as a member of the minority. First, you can start building those relationships that you're going to need to bring home results for decades to come. But beyond that, a major part of what a member of Congress does is constituent services, making sure that constituents get what they need from the federal bureaucracy. It can be a tangled thicket sometimes, whether it's Social Security, the VA, or beyond. And being able to be a voice for people to make sure that they get what they are entitled to, what they deserve, that's really important. And I'm going to focus on that as a freshman and beyond.
Now, as a millennial, I wonder if you've got maybe additional concerns over older folks about the rising national debt. I mean, we've seen it really skyrocket during this administration and the prior one.
Yeah, I think the important thing to think about is, what investments are you making? It's one thing to invest money in infrastructure that's going to repay itself over time and beyond. It's another thing to give away tax breaks to the wealthiest Americans. It's another thing to spend money to prime the pump of the economy when you don't need to. We're running pretty hot right now. We have a 3.6% unemployment rate in the country. That's very low. And so I think what's most important for a member of Congress to think about is, what are the investments that you're making? Are they going to deliver returns? Those are the ones that you should focus on, with an eye on making sure that you stay within your means.
What is your evaluation of what the Biden administration has done so far?
I think they've done an extraordinary job in a couple of ways. First, the American Rescue Plan and the infrastructure bill, which were bipartisan, both of those had some things that really impacted people on a day-to-day basis. Child tax credit cut child poverty in half by some estimates. Those are really terrific programs, and the Biden administration should be proud of those. On the other hand, of course, there's things that have not gone so well. The withdrawal from Afghanistan has been a real challenge. The sense that inflation was just going to be a blip, it hasn't been, and I think that the administration understands that now and is taking concrete action to try to address it.
What are your thoughts about the U.S. role on the world stage? I mean, right now we have the Russia-Ukraine situation. I just heard back from somebody this morning who just got back from spending about a month in Ukraine, and just the intensity of things over there. What's the U.S. to do?
I believe really strongly, and I say this as a member of the Truman National Security Project, something I've really spent a lot of time on, that America has to lead on the world stage and that the world needs America to lead, whether that's on climate, whether that's on COVID, whether that's on fighting autocracy abroad, whether that's on challenging and confronting and defending our allies when they're under assault. America has to lead. And so when it comes to Ukraine in particular, we can do more there. The Biden administration has done a lot, but we can do more to get weapons in the hands of Ukrainians and to expand the NATO alliance to include countries like Finland, which have a huge border with Russia, and that are going to be the next on Putin's list if we don't take this seriously.
It seems like as the Ukraine situation evolved, almost nobody expected it to still be going on now.
Yeah, Vladimir Putin didn't. He really underestimated the will and the fighting force of the Ukrainians, extraordinary bravery, and the president, Zelensky, is just an example of that. I think that we have to be in this for the long haul with them. If we're going to be an ally, you're not an ally for a hot second. You've got to really be there for them on an ongoing basis, not only while the war is still happening, but after the war, to help Ukraine rebuild. It's incredibly important, and that's what an ally should do.
And yet there's a concern as this drags on, because people start looking at options to put things to rest, then you start getting very nervous.
You do. And I think that, you know, Anne Applebaum said something important the other day, which is the only way this war ends is if Ukraine wins it. And America has to help Ukraine win it. And that means doing everything we can, again, to get them the weapons that they need, the training that they need. They have been an extraordinary fighting force, and we've got to have their back.
About a minute left on Inside Douglas County. Ballots go out in less than 2 weeks for voters in the 4th District. Final thoughts as to why Democrats that are looking at their ballot should consider voting for you.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary opportunity for people. This is a once-in-a-generation open seat election. It's a swing seat. It will be a difficult race in the fall for Democrats. And I truly believe that what people are looking for in this race is an independent mind and a new generation of leadership in D.C. People are frustrated with the status quo. They are frustrated with the establishment. If we just go for the next person in line, we're going to end up losing this race. We need new blood in Washington with new ideas who can bring people together. That's me, and I'd be honored to earn the votes of everybody in Douglas County.
And if people want to find out more about you, what's your website?
It's andrewkalik.com, and you can email me directly at andrew@andrewkalik.com. I will respond to you, let you know more about my policies, and again, proud to earn your vote.
Andrew Kalik, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Thanks, Kyle. Always a pleasure.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.